As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10, place your first bet on any game, and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.
Big Thing on Total Soccer Show, the weekly episode where we take a deep dive into one of the meatiest topics in the beautiful game. This week, we cast our eye to the reigning world champions of soccer, the reigning treble holders in the Premier League, and likely the best team of the last few seasons, Manchester City. Pep Guardiola's side are a tour de force, but they're not exactly running away with the Premier League right now, and they're quietly doing their business in the Champions League, while we routinely praise other teams. But you wouldn't rule them out from dominating any competition they enter. So, the question is Man City destined to win another treble this season? And if not, what's going to stop them? My name's Ryan Bailey. Joining me to talk all things City, it's Graham Ruthven. Hello, Graham.
Hello, Ryan Bailey.
Also joining us, Mr. Joseph Lowry. Hello, Joe.
City.
Oh, my God. You're... Liam Gallagher's joined us.
I was going to say excuse you, Joe, but yeah, that was a wonderful impression. Spent much time in Manchester, Joe?
Zero. I'd like to someday. I know it's not London, but I'd like to spend more time in England in general. Maybe catch a City game now and then. I'm down. Let's do it.
Yes, good. Manchester, very nice.
Yeah, Manchester is very nice. I was just going to say that, Ryan. It gets a bad rap. Like, that's a cliche with footballers, is like, oh, they have to live in Manchester over London. I know Ryan thinks London is the best city in the world, but Manchester is Manchester's nice. Like, it's a good place to live.
Yeah, I mean, it's all relative. You live further north than Manchester as well, so, you know, it's a scale, Graham.
But, yeah, it's just not in the way that you think.
Indeed. Yeah, Joe, I very much recommend a trip to Manchester and to dear listener as well, Old Trafford and the Etihad, great stadium. Just bring an umbrella. Just bring an umbrella. That's my only advice for you should you visit at any time of year. Before we get to this discussion, patreon.com/totalsoccershow for our bonus content, bonus podcasts in there. There's bonus videos, access to our Discord where all the cool kids are hanging out. And Graham, on the Patreon feed right now, it's our bonus episode about soccer rivalries. What's the big one this weekend? Or one of them? What is it?
It's the Manchester Derby. Almost like we planned it. So we're doing a big thing on Manchester City, and we've done a Patreon bonus episode on the best rivalries, or our favourite rivalries, I should say, in world football.
Yes, they weren't the best. Certainly mine weren't the best. They were just my favourite. Tune into Patreon to find out more.
Definitely weren't the best.
Patreon.com/totalsoccershow. Oh, thank you very much. All right, let's talk Manchester City. Graham, to start off the conversation, and something I was hinting at in the intro, do we take Man City for granted? Do we take how good they are as sort of just a thing, and we watch them quietly go about what they do, and we talk about other teams a bit more, and we don't sort of reflect enough on the magnificence of this team?
Yeah, I definitely think that's a thing when we were talking about some potential big thing subjects for this week. I kind of raised that. Maybe we should talk about Manchester City, given that they're on course for a double treble. Maybe the greatest team of all time. We'll come on to that discussion point a little bit later on. And we maybe don't go in as depth on City as we should. Possibly because they're so good, it kind of becomes a little bit of a moot point. And I would actually say before Haaland, pre-Haaland, I found Manchester City a little bit boring. Certainly as like a group of characters and personalities, felt like they were kind of a group of a team of pet robots. This is where I've changed my opinion since Erling Haaland has come in. And even from a footballing point of view, they're having to compromise. He's not the archetypal Manchester City Pep Guardiola centre forward. So in that, there's interest for me. And of course, he's a robot. He's in a different way to the team of pet robots. An entertaining robot. A robot with personality, Erling Haaland, is how I would describe him. So yeah, I totally agree with the premise of your point. I think sometimes we do overlook Manchester City, despite the fact they are so good.
Grealish and Walker doing their best not to be robotic, I'd argue, in that City lineup as well.
That's true.
All right, Joe, tell us a little bit about City, where we're at with them at the moment. Arguably, in the Champions League, they've got the only tie that's settled after the first leg of the round of 16. And obviously, in the Premier League, they're not top at the moment, but doing pretty well.
Yeah, they're doing just fine at the moment in the Champions League. The Premier League is very much a three-horse race, and Liverpool and Arsenal fans, we will give your teams plenty of shine between now and the end of the season. Don't you worry about that whatsoever. Liverpool fans, I can imagine you all feeling slightly hard done by because you're top of the Premier League right now. We will talk much more about you, and I am looking so much forward to that game on March 10th between Liverpool and Manchester City in the Premier League. I think that could be the title decider. Maybe Arsenal are going to have a say in that at some point along the line. But at this point, City are deep in the FA Cup. They are basically through the quarterfinals of the Champions League, and they are in contention in the bookmakers' favorites to win the Premier League right now. So I'll run through the top three in the table. At the moment, it's Liverpool in first in the Premier League on 60 points. City are in second on 59, and Arsenal are in third on 58. Like I said, a three-horse race, but everybody is backing Man City right now, and I think we probably all would do that as well. The bookmakers are giving them about a 50% chance to win, the one that I looked at converting some odds into actual numbers that make a bit more sense to the common folk. Liverpool, they're giving about a 35% chance to win the title, and Arsenal 15%. That will sway, again, dramatically based off of what happens when Liverpool and Manchester City meet in a week and a half or so, a little less than a week, I guess a little less than a week and a half. You have to imagine that Liverpool's long injury list plays a really big role in that factor. Like, they just don't really seem to have the squad depth right now to make anybody feel great about them going and beating City to that title despite the 1 point edge with equal number of minutes of games played. Man, City are in a much better spot doing what, Graham, you always point out about City, and they almost always do this. They consistently generate more points in the second half of the season than they do in the first, and that is exactly what we are seeing right now.
Indeed, it is. I mean, Joe, also looking at a comparison in the Premier League, last season, after 26 games, they were also second, 5 points behind Arsenal. A full 5 points behind Arsenal. They've got less of a gap now at the moment. The season before that, they were actually 3 points ahead after 26 games. But the point being, as you make it eloquently there, is that they shouldn't be worried about being in second spot at this position in time, right?
No, it doesn't seem that way. And one thing that Pep Guardiola always does is he takes real care in rotating his squad. And I don't know that this is for injury reasons to try and help his group avoid injuries, which hasn't really happened this year, by the way, and we'll come on to talk about some of that later. But I think Pep is just obsessive about every individual little matchup and how each of his individual players can exploit a weakness in the opposition, even if it's just this fractional percentage kind of thing. But that leads to real consistent rotation. You don't see a lot of City players start every single game of the season, even if they're fit. You just don't see that. And so come the second half of the year, where they've had time to fully gel tactically, you come into the second half of the season and almost everybody's fresh. Players are fit. Players are back in the team. And we are seeing that right now. And that gives them a little extra boost for the final stretch. And it's not just a fluke. We have seen this happen consistently over the last several years. This year, their points per game tally is not where it was last year. Last year, they were at 2.45 points per game. This year, they're at 2.27. But Ryan, you just said it. They had a bigger gap to close last year than they do this year. And we are seeing this team before our eyes round into form. They have gone 16 straight unbeaten. They have 14 wins in those last 16 games across all competitions.
Yeah, I think you've done a really good job there, Joe, of outlining where City are right now, why they are widely seen as the favourites. And I agree that personally, for me, they would be my favourites to win this season, the Premier League title. I do think we should also, though, outline how this season has been a bit of a weird one in periods for them. There have been some really strong periods where they have looked like the team that won the treble last season. And then there have been some other periods where they have looked pretty vulnerable. There was a period in late September into October where they lost 3 out of 4 matches. That was when they lost to Arsenal, they lost to Wolves, and they were knocked out of the Carabao Cup by Newcastle United. Incidentally, those 3 matches were 3 matches that Rodri was suspended for. So we got a hint of how important he is to this team in that period. There was another difficult period in November when City went 4 league games without a win. And that period before Christmas, which is when that happened, City were conceding a lot of goals. They conceded 4 against Chelsea, 3 goals against Spurs. They went 9 games. I think that's in all competitions rather than just in the league. But nonetheless, 9 games in a row without a clean sheet. And they have turned a corner a little bit. Since the start of the Club World Cup in December, City have won 14 of 15 matches. But even recently, the performances against Brentford and Bournemouth last week, we're putting aside the Luton game where Erling Haaland scored 5 goals in one game, because that's the sort of thing that he does. But looking at the 2 performances against Brentford and Bournemouth, by their high standards, they were poor in those matches. So maybe I'm setting the bar too high, but there are some vulnerabilities that maybe weren't there last season.
Joe, can we dig into sort of more of the differences in his team this season to last? I think obviously maybe Jeremy Doku playing a bigger role at the moment and Julian Alvarez. We didn't expect Alvarez necessarily to be on the field at the same time as Haaland not so long ago. Perhaps we can talk about a bit how they're using those players.
Yeah, and Alvarez getting more and more involved in this team. I think there's a straight line between Kevin De Bruyne being injured for 4 months of the season. He's just now getting back. He's still played fewer than 500 minutes in the Premier League this season. And Alvarez having a bigger role, where we've seen him for the most part, Ryan, your point's spot on. We've seen him on the field with Erling Haaland. Yeah, he started some games when Haaland wasn't available or wasn't on the field for Pep. But in general, it has been Alvarez, playing in the half spaces this season, which gives this City team a different dynamic. In general, I don't think enough has been made of how different this Manchester City team is from last year to this year. Tactically, the general principles are all still the same. Pep has really started to love the idea of pushing a center back into midfield. John Stones, when he's been fit, has been in that role, except John Stones hasn't been fit all the time. He struggled with injuries earlier in the season as well. We've seen some changes when it comes to the wide personnel. Gundogan's off to Barcelona, and Kovacic hasn't really fully replaced him in that midfield group. There have been a lot of those little things that have changed, and they've all come together to make this City team slightly less effective. Even though, by the way, I think Julian Alvarez is a superstar, and I think he is one of the best players in the world, and I even think he was very good in that role. All of the other elements and even some of the knock-on effects of using him as a more midfield type rather than a pure forward, that impacts some of the defensive stuff. And Graham, you mentioned that, right? There was a stretch earlier in this season, and it still feels like we get glimpses of it now and then, where City would allow a bunch of goals. They've drawn 2 games with Chelsea this season. They let in 4 in the first game. We talked about that in depth on Weekend Review. We've seen them concede goals to Tottenham. We've seen them concede goals to teams that they shouldn't. This year, City have allowed more goals on fast breaks, so think quick transition attacks to their opposition, than in any previous Pep Guardiola Manchester City season. They've allowed 6 goals on fast breaks this year, and the season's not done yet, right? You can assume there'll be 1 or 2 more of those before the year closes. City have struggled to stop teams from progressing the ball against them. They've struggled to really fully lock down those counterattacking opportunities. We've seen some uncharacteristic mistakes. Guardiola has not been error-proof on the left side of their back 3 in possession.
Yeah.
This is not a perfect team. They're still a very, very good team, but the transitional period for this group is real and probably more real than a lot of us thought it would be coming into this season.
Yeah, those numbers regarding fast breaks, Joe, are really stark. They're 19th among 20 teams in the Premier League this season for conceding fast break goals. Now, of course, the caveat there is Man City are higher up the pitch for more often than most teams, so you're going to get more opportunity to counter on them, essentially. But nonetheless, that is still quite a high number, a stark number to read. And in terms of the reason why this is happening, Guardiola was asked about this a couple of weeks ago, and his response was quite interesting because he had this theory that City are attacking more quickly now, and that leaves them vulnerable to teams coming back at them quickly in another direction. And I think that has to be linked in some way to Erling Haaland and the way that you need to integrate Erling Haaland into this team as a centre forward. We've seen past Manchester City centre forwards like Sergio Aguero or Phil Foden in that season that he largely played as a false nine. The way that you integrate them into that team is very different to how you integrate Erling Haaland, and you get the best out of him. You want him getting in behind, and so City are having to attack more vertically and more quickly, and that is maybe having an impact on how the trap door is open at the back, so to speak. I also think some of it is down to individual performance levels. So Joe mentioned Josko Gvardiol. I think he's struggled a little bit this season. He is a tremendous player, and I have no doubt that he will ultimately become a key figure for Manchester City, because we've seen that before, right? With other players that have come in at Manchester City, they maybe take a season to get used to the demands that Pep puts on them, and then after that, they flourish. But Guardiola, I think he's struggled a bit to get to grips with the amount of work that the wide defenders in the back three are asked to do under Pep Guardiola. Kyle Walker still has the speed, but in defensive transition this season, there have been some dodgy moments, most recently against Raheem Sterling. I don't know why, but Raheem Sterling always seems to give Kyle Walker trouble. And then Nathan Ake and Manuel Akanji, I both think individually as well, they haven't been as strong this season as they were last season. I looked at their individual dual numbers. Both of them have dropped off a bit, so they might still be getting into the position to make engagements, but within those dueling moments, Akanji and Ake are not winning the ball as effectively as they were last season. So I think there is a collective discussion here, which is what Guardiola is getting at, but my personal opinion is it has more to do with the individuals really just maybe not performing at the same level.
Yeah, Graham, that's exactly where I was going to continue on after you're done there. You think about the first stretch of poor performances for this Man City team back in the end of September, early October. What was the common denominator there? Rodri was missing after putting his hands around Morgan Gibbs-White's neck, and that's not something you should do, and he was rightfully given a red card against Nottingham Forest, and he missed time, and City dropped points. You think about them missing John Stones for long periods of time. That has been really impactful. De Bruyne even missing Erling Haaland for a stretch. It is difficult, even for Manchester City and how good they are and how much money they spend and how talented and how resourceful they are in every way because of the money that's behind that club. It's difficult for them, even, to withstand all of those losses. And I think this is something about Manchester City in the state of soccer in the Premier League, to be honest. The fact that they have dealt with all those things and all it's done is take them from being a near guaranteed title winner towards the end of the season to being in a title race and still being the odds-on favorite. I think that makes a statement about where soccer is in England right now. But Man City are very much in a title race, even though I think we'd all give them the edge. And the lack of individuals that have been available for them through stretches of this season, mixed with some of the tactical knock-ons from those things, they have made a difference.
Joe, can we jump back to that Rodri thing, which we've mentioned a couple of times in the podcast already? We regard Man City as, you know, a very strong team with great depth. When they go without Kevin De Bruyne for long periods, they're still an awesome team. They can recover from individual absences. But it does seem that in that position, we had it with Fernandinho in the previous iteration of Man City, didn't we? When he was absent, Man City, it was problematic for them. They tended to get their losses or their draws when he was absent. Yeah. Similar thing with Rodri. So it does make you realise that despite them being a force with all this great depth, there's a veneer here in a particular player being absent, isn't there?
Well, sorry, just to jump in, Joe, but I think the factor there is the player that they signed to be the Rodri depth option is now on loan at West Ham. Calvin Phillips was meant to be that player, and for whatever reason, Pep just didn't feel like he could integrate him into his squad. I think the way the pace that he would progress the ball was a bit of an issue. He does that in a little bit slower than Pep Guardiola would
like. But
that's
on Pep, though, isn't it?
That's an existential question. Who's to blame for a player maybe not flourishing at a club in the way that they were expected to? But I think looking at the way Calvin Phillips has played for West Ham, Pep was right maybe not to give him more game minutes. But that is, Man City don't whiff on many signings. They generally have a higher success rate than most clubs. I think that has been one failure, was Calvin Phillips did not pan out as the depth option they envisaged he would be.
Agreed, Graham. And another factor here that probably goes under discussed is that Rodri has developed into the best tempo-setting number six in the world and one of the greatest that we've ever seen. We see this with Spain. Even when Graham calls him a wet wipe, we see it at the club level when Graham still calls him a wet wipe. Like, he's the real deal, and nobody globally is better at controlling the ball in tight spots deep in midfield, distributing, keeping the tempo, positioning off the ball in rest defense and in counter-pressure moments to go and win it back. And so, yes, Graham, your point is completely correct that the deputy option didn't pan out. And Ryan, I'm sensitive to your point as well about Pep maybe being overly detail-oriented at times, but you can't really argue with the results from Guardiola. But the challenge is City haven't had someone to really replace Rodri. Now that he's back in the team and De Bruyne is back in the team and Haaland's back in the team and everybody's back in the team, it's really hard to see this team not having a ton of success and winning at least one, if not more than one, trophy. But when there is a crack there, there's a crack there.
Yeah, I think almost as big an issue, and I mentioned this, can't remember if it was this week on the Week in Review or if it was another week, but Joe, you mentioned Julian Alvarez, and look, he's had a fantastic season. He was a really important bridge for Manchester City when Kevin De Bruyne and Erling Haaland were both out injured, but in that time, he was maybe playing in a more overtly attacking role. Since they both come back into the team, he has stayed in the team, which I think is something you mentioned, Ryan, Alvarez playing with De Bruyne and Haaland. But what that means is, in defensive phase, he's having to fill in alongside Rodri as a central midfielder, essentially. And I just don't think he's got the instincts to do that. So last season, that was Ilkay Gundogan who would do that, who was much more adept at toggling between being an auxiliary attacker and being like a straight-up central midfielder. So if we're looking at the City squad and identifying a weakness with an individual, I think it might be there. That's kind of where I expect them in the summer to move, is maybe for someone who can perform that role and also operate as a depth option behind Rodri.
All right, let's take a quick break. When we come back, we're going to dig into this City team a little further and maybe even dig into some legal troubles that might be on the horizon. Back shortly.
This episode is brought to you by Michelob Ultra, the official beer sponsor of the NBA. Want to get closer to the game than ever before? Michelob Ultra Courtside is giving fans the chance to win exclusive NBA prizes and experiences like official gear, courtside seats to an NBA game, and more. Head over to MichelobUltra.com/courtside to learn more.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
Total Soccer Show, welcome back to the big thing. We're talking all things Manchester City. Graham, let's focus our attention on the big robot, Erling Haaland, for a moment. Had a rather good outing midweek as we record against Luton. Still didn't get a 10 rating, I think, on FotMob, by the way. I think he had a 9.7.
What?
Yeah. What does a man have to do?
I'm looking at who scored. They gave him a 10. They were a little bit more generous. What do you need to do to get a 10? I didn't watch this match live. I was at a Stirling Albion match, but I was checking the score on my phone, and I was like, there's an issue with FotMob. There's a glitch going on here, because the first four goals, or the first three goals, were De Bruyne assist, Haaland goal, and so I thought, this can't be right. But it was right. That is what happened.
Well, we've had some recent games, certainly, where a lot of chances have gone missed. Are we worried about Erling Haaland, confidence in front of goal or conversion rates or anything?
No, I'm not concerned about that at all. I think it's a little bit silly to criticise him for a couple of matches where maybe he wasn't at his sharpest, but to do my best, Joseph Lowry, impression here.
Do the voice, Graham, do the voice.
I don't know if I can. I can only do the I am Joe Larry. I don't know if I can actually do any other words. But he is still taking up good goal scoring positions. And while I think there are certain players who have a track record of who I think buck that trend and buck that theory, and maybe them taking up better positions is not the solution to them scoring more goals, although more often it is than not it is. Erling Haaland is not one of those players. He is one of the sharpest finishers around. Possibly the best goal scorer of his generation. He scored 5 goals against Luton Town during the week. I'm looking at his goal scoring numbers here. He's got 17 goals in 21 games in the Premier League this season. He's got 5 goals in 6 games in the Champions League. I thought after the Messi and Ronaldo era, we would never see numbers like that again, at least for a long time. And Erling Haaland has proven me wrong, because these numbers are ridiculous.
Graham, if you were here, I'd give you a big old kiss on your forehead. I'm so happy.
Erling Haaland.
Yeah. Oh, no, I'm good. Erling Haaland, you mentioned some of his numbers there, Graham. He's still leading the Premier League in goals. He's still leading in the Premier League in goals per 90 minutes, 17 and 0.88 respectively. One interesting thing about Haaland, though, and you're talking about some of the XG stuff there, Erling Haaland always overperforms his expected goals. There are some players out there who seem to convert shots at a higher rate sustainably that most soccer players, 99.99999% of soccer players, don't, right? They sort of do buck that trend, but in a way that makes them even more dangerous and somehow predictable as well, predictably excellent. Erling Haaland has been one of those players. Last year, he overperformed his XG by 8 goals. You go back to his time at Dortmund, 3, 4, 5 goals in Salzburg. Like, that was his thing, was he was going to get in a ton of good goal-scoring positions, but he was going to convert from those spots at an even higher rate than your average run-of-the-mill elite 25-goal-a-season striker. Like, Erling Haaland, that was his superpower. And it has been for Man City. It was last year. This year, not so much. He's actually just underperforming his XG. He's basically right on it. You know, I think he's a goal or two below. And I would expect him to probably hit right on that number by the time the season ends. But it's one of the fascinating things for Man City. Last year, they were propelled in that title race. Ryan, you're talking about them being 5 points back at this point in the season. They're propelled by Erling Haaland being a complete, like, absurdity up top. And he still is that, but just not quite up to his usual standards. And I think there's probably a few reasons for that. One, you know, maybe it's just natural, and it's purely natural, and this is just a downward dip that comes, and he's going to be fine next year. But I think he's missed 12 games with injury so far this season. That is a factor. They were missing Kevin De Bruyne for 4 months, and nobody provides for Erling Haaland quite like Kevin De Bruyne does. And so I think that is massive. It doesn't necessarily explain why Haaland isn't finishing quite the same way in the moments where he has shots in front of goal. But it does maybe show the types of shots he's getting are different because they're coming from different players in different parts of the field. So that is a factor there. And then the other one, and I'm least likely to believe this, but I do think it's possible, that opposing defenses in England are getting better at dealing with Erling Haaland. I don't think you can ever totally deal with him, but suddenly players might realize, oh, crap. Like, I need to be four steps deeper right now if I want to have a half chance of stopping this guy. They're still not stopping him, and Graham and I have laid that out very, very clearly. But all of those things combined maybe explain some of Haaland just being absurdly good and not quite Erling Haaland absurdly good. But him turning it on would obviously do a lot for City as they finish this year.
Joe, I thought you were going to say your second theory is he's finished and Man City should sell him. But
that we to can Phoenix have that Rising, down as a, obviously. Yeah.
Of course. We'll have that down as a third theory.
Right.
I find all that stuff interesting, Joe. But I think you're on the same page as me, not concerned
ultimately,
about
yes.
Haaland scoring goals. What was interesting, however, was Pep Guardiola completely unprompted having a go at Haaland's body language a few weeks ago. So this was after a match against Everton, and the quote was, "His body language in the first half was not good. The second half was much, much better. For him, when he scores a goal, his mood is different. And after it, he makes more movements and everything. He is better. He has to learn that if he doesn't score, he has to have the right body language. He has to have this mood where he's positive and he's saying, okay, it will come. It will come." There's been a lot of analysis of this, and I do find it quite interesting because it seems like there's an interesting dynamic between Pep and Haaland. We've seen it countless times where the two of them are engaged in a lively discussion on the pitch after a match or even at halftime. My outsider's analysis is that Pep knows Haaland is the sort of character who needs that kind of that I'll show you mentality, if I can call it that. I think Alex Ferguson was very good at doing something similar, and Pep has the same quality. And furthermore, to my point I made earlier, Haaland's just a different sort of character to the rest of the Man City team. He's not one of the Pep robots. He's a different kind of robot. And so I think he does need a slightly different management style, and that to me is just Pep giving him a little dig in the ribs and keeping him motivated, I think.
And still in the most Pep way ever, Graham, like two quotes later, in that, at least in the piece that I read about it, Pep says, quote, "His body language is not a problem." So Pep Guardiola continues to be the most confusing man on planet Earth. But I do think, you know, he seemed to think that that was an issue for Erling Haaland. And maybe it is. And maybe this is something that continues to help propel Erling Haaland forward as he learns more of how to play in a possession system and what it's like being under this level of spotlight. But yeah, Pep continues to be ridiculously polarizing and confusing all at the same time.
All right, Joe, fundamental question which might help us solve the thesis of this Big Thing episode. Is Man City, right now, as a snapshot, better than last season when they won the treble? Or is it worse?
I think this team is worse. Now, I don't think that means that they can't win the treble. I absolutely think that's on the table. I'll share my prediction later on that front. But I do think that this team has a shot to do all of those things. But you go through and look, you know, they're just now getting De Bruyne back, and that's been a big miss for them. They are just now sort of getting healthy as a collective. Erling Haaland hasn't quite been where he's been before. So no, I don't think this team is better now than they were last year. If you give me another 4 weeks, another few Champions League match days, another few Premier League match days, a strong performance against Liverpool, yeah, I don't think there's anything really stopping this team from being as good as they were last year. But I don't think this current team today as a recording is the same level quite as they were in 2023.
Graham?
Yeah, I would agree with that. I would break it down into individuals, which I know is a slightly reductive way to do it, but I'm trying to come up with some sort of logic here. I think you could find at least five Manchester City players this season who have not been as good as they were last season. So I mentioned Akanji, Nathan Ake, John Stones has been injured for a lot of the season. Kevin De Bruyne has been injured for a lot of the season. Erling Haaland's been injured for a lot of the season. So that right there, you've got like five players who have not been up to the standards of last year. So I would agree with Joe.
Okay. And do we regard the treble winning City as like the best iteration? I mean, there were some pretty fine ones in like 17, 18 sort of era as well.
The best Manchester City team of all time? Oh, yeah, absolutely. Yeah, there was a point last season. I would go even further. Maybe we're skipping ahead in our discussion a little bit here, but there was a point in the second half of last season where I'm thinking to myself, this might be the best team I've ever seen. I remember talking about this on the show. I wasn't quite sure how their back three with John Stones stepping into midfield was working. It felt like it shouldn't work, but somehow they cracked something in football science and everything just worked in the second half of the season. So absolutely, yeah, they're the greatest City team I've seen. I mean, there's been some good ones. The one that won the first Premier League title under Roberto Mancini was a good team. Then you had the Manuel Pellegrini team. I would even say like the first iteration of Pep's City team with Aguero and David Silva is obviously a legendary Premier League team, but nothing compares to what we saw last season.
All right, we're going to revisit this, obviously, in a second when we decide whether Man City are going to win the treble again this season. But before we get there, there's this giant elephant in the room that we need to kind of try and at least address, Graham. The charges against Manchester City, the 115 Premier League charges, which currently reside with Manchester City's lawyers. What's the deal? What's the process there at the moment? Why are Everton and Forest getting punished when Man City... Oh, it's money. It's money. Right. Okay, got it.
It's money and lawyers is the answer. Yeah. It's the answer to everything in life. So it's over a year since the Premier League charged Man City, as you mentioned, Ryan, with 115 breaches of its financial rules over 9 different seasons. If those charges are proven, there's basically no punishment off the table for Manchester City. They could have titles stripped. They could have a massive fine. They could be demoted down the league pyramids. They could have points deductions. As I say, there's nothing off the table. The latest update that we have on the process was Richard Masters, who is the Premier League CEO. He said in January that a date had been set for the case to be heard, but couldn't confirm when that date would be. There's a huge amount of... That was convenient of him. Yeah. There's a huge amount of secrecy around the case because lawyers on both sides have created this situation where nobody can say anything about it. One report I read said the hearing could take place before the end of this season. Another report I read said early 2025. So nobody really has any idea when this hearing is going to take place besides Richard Masters, who's not telling anyone what that date is. As far as I can tell, the Premier League has given Manchester City what it views as an appropriate amount of time to collect evidence and build their case before the hearing. And there is frustration building within the Premier League clubs over the amount of time that Manchester City have been given. But City would argue this is an unprecedented number of charges, and so it's natural that it would take a long time for that process to happen. Keep in mind that City also have a team of lawyers fronted by a QC who's being paid more than Kevin De Bruyne per week. So they will be fighting everything to gain every inch that they can.
What's
in
his
this dialogue. It's even more glorious. Of course, to the outsider, you mentioned the Everton and Nottingham Forest thing, cases there, Ryan. To the outsider, the fact that Everton and Forest have been charged and in Everton's case dealt with and punished and then had an appeal all happen in well under the time that City's case has taken. It kind of adds to the farce a little bit, but there is a fundamental difference between these cases. So City's charges fall outside the Premier League's profit and sustainability rules, so there is a greater degree of ambiguity. Also, Everton, if we look at them specifically, they held their hands up and they admitted that they had broken the rules, ultimately, I think under a little bit of pressure initially, but ultimately that's what they did. And so the process was then for them was determining the charge. For City, they are denying everything. So they have to go through the process of finding the charge to be proven or not. Keep in mind there's 115 of them before we even get to the punishment, if there is one. So even when this case is heard, whenever that happens, I anticipate this is going to be a long old process before we get any sort of meaningful outcome.
Graham, what I assume is an incredibly inconsequential question. What is a QC that you mentioned there? Is that a British legal term that I don't know?
Just like a chief lawyer person. Like big important
big
lawyer.
Law guy. All right. Gotcha.
Yeah.
Big law.
Yeah. One who wears a wig in serious court.
Really?
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's
yeah.
funny.
And a gown. Yeah, it's all very fancy over there, Joe. Believe me. So Graham, there's a scenario where charges are held against City sometime between now and when the sun eventually runs out of hydrogen, and City win a double treble, but they are rescinded. That could happen, right?
Factually, that could happen. I don't know how likely that is to happen because I'm not on either the Premier League or the Manchester City lawyers team. So I don't really have any inside information. But yeah, any punishment is on the table. Not only that, Man City could have titles stripped back to 2009. Having said what I've just said, Ryan, maybe they couldn't, if they win a double treble this season, because the charges don't relate to this season, right? So it would be past achievements. So having said yes, I think the answer is actually no. It would be past achievements dated back to 2009.
Guys, I'm just looking at this QC stuff online on Google Images, and the hair is more glorious. So I think we are confirmed on that. The wigs are more glorious. I'm beginning to think that the money is well deserved.
Yeah, those wigs don't come cheap, that's for sure, Joe. No. We're going to take another quick break. When we come back, we're going to dig into that question of whether City can win the treble, and if not, what's going to stop them. Back shortly.
This episode is supported by Season 3 of FX's Welcome to Wrexham. Celebrity owners Rob McElhenney and Ryan Reynolds' small-town Welsh football club has finally been promoted into League 2 after 15 seasons in the National League. Dedicated staff and supporters celebrate the city's return to glory while bracing for the newfound challenges that come with being in a higher division. Will Wrexham AFC stand up to the challenges and rise again into League One? FX's Welcome to Wrexham premieres May 2nd on FX. Stream on Hulu.
Today's episode is brought to you by Shopify. On the Total Soccer Show, we often talk about the importance of a manager who can clearly and effectively communicate their tactics and then a squad of players capable of executing that approach, but also adding some individual flair along the way. And that's the same relationship you're getting with Shopify. You tell them how you want things to work or what you need to get done, and they execute the game plan, sometimes even better than you could have expected, with Shopify Magic, their AI-powered all-star. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business, from the launch your online shop stage to the first real store stage, all the way to the did we just hit over a million orders stage? Shopify is there to help you grow. From what I've heard from family members who use Shopify for their online store, which has evolved into an amazing brick-and-mortar location, Shopify has helped with that growth, and with every step along the way, they've made it easier to process and track orders, run the business day-to-day, and help with long-term growth as well. So whether you're auctioning autographed jerseys or selling custom stadium prints, both of which are awesome, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout, up to 36% compared to other leading commerce platforms. And you can sell more with less effort thanks to Shopify Magic, the aforementioned AI-powered all-star. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the United States and is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, their extensive help resources are there to support your success every step of the way, because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial at shopify.com/TSS. That's all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/TSS now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. One more time, all lowercase. That's shopify.com/TSS.
Total Soccer Show, welcome back to our big thing. All right, it's time to get our opinions on whether City can win this treble. Joe, I'm going to say I don't think it's going to happen, just for the sheer fact that trebles are really, really, really hard to do, and it's just so unlikely to do two in a row, frankly. And I think back to, was it 2020, 2021, when Man City lost the Champions League final to Chelsea? I think they lost the FA Cup final. It's so marginal, and there's so many games in Man City's Champions League runs over the years that have been incredibly marginal as well. And it just feels like a lot of things would have to fall their way for this to happen again. I just feel statistically, at least, it is unlikely that this Man City side will win a treble once again. But I don't know. I feel like it's just a marginal call.
Ryan, I totally agree. It's boring sometimes to be the nerdy stats person, so you've done it for me, which I do appreciate, and I'm very thankful. Odds of them winning all three trophies, real low. Just mathematically, right? It doesn't take a genius to figure that out. But even looking at history, I think this is fascinating, guys. I was looking into the number of teams that have won trebles, and I mean like a genuine treble, right? I'm not talking the fourth most important League Cup.
The Mourinho treble.
Yeah, I'm talking about like a real... You win your league, you win your primary domestic cup, and you win the Champions League.
Or the Liverpool quad that's on right now.
Yeah, okay, well, whatever, right? There have only been 8 European teams to have won a genuine treble in those categories that I just described. Manchester City are one of them. That was last year. They would be the first team in European soccer history to do it in back-to-back seasons. The first team in European soccer history to ever do that. It's happened once in Australia. It's happened once in the Middle East. This has never happened in Europe before. So adding that to the equation makes me think, no, I don't think that City are going to get the job done. At the same time, to be clear, and these things are not mutually exclusive, Manchester City are the favorite in every competition they're in right now. They're the favorite in the Champions League. They're the favorite in the FA Cup. They're the favorite in the Premier League. Liverpool are still alive in both of those domestic competitions, which means it is not an easy road for Man City to get the job done in the FA Cup and in the Premier League. But still, this team, even when you say that they're the favorite in every competition, just the sheer odds of them doing it and what history tells us, the odds are, no, they're probably not going to get that done.
Yeah. Graham, I think there was a stat that I mentioned on the show a little while ago about the last time City weren't the favorite in a game.
And I remember it.
2017 against Napoli.
Wild.
Which is incredible. And as Joe mentions, they are the favourites. They've been the favourites in every competition the last few years as well. With that, how likely do you think a treble is this season?
See that stat that you've just mentioned there? What is it, 2017, the last game? That honestly makes me think, what's the point? Like, what are we all doing here talking about this? Like, if Manchester City are just going to win everything. To answer your question, I was really quite bullish last season on City winning the treble, not to give myself too much credit, but I think about this time last year, I had predicted City would win the treble. One of my better predictions. And then AFCON happened and Nigeria made the final of that tournament after I predicted they'd go out in the group stage. So there's balance to these things. This season, I certainly think it's possible. I just see too many chaos matches happening for them to win all three. To your point, Ryan, I think there will be a match where an opponent scores with all three fast breaks that they have in a game, or a slightly questionable penalty is given against Manchester City. So my prediction, slightly arbitrary prediction, is they'll win two, but not three. I think they'll win the Premier League. I guess I think they'll win the FA Cup. If I think they're the best team in England, then I've not really got any evidence to suggest they won't win the FA Cup. But the Champions League, I don't know. I just feel like there will be a team that's close enough to their level to capitalise on a chaos match to knock them out. I'm looking at Real Madrid. That very much feels like their kind of thing.
I think I also had Real Madrid picked to win the Champions League this season, so I'm going with your prediction of two out of the three there, Graham. Picking up on your point of what's the point of all this if they are always the favourite for the last, what, 6 or 7, 8 years. Is it bad for English soccer or even European soccer that if they did do this treble again, would it be a bad thing? Would it just make it a bit sort of unveil the veneer of competitiveness that we have in this competition?
I don't think it's a great thing, to be honest, and it's nothing against Manchester City as a club. I would have the same feeling if it was another team pulling off a double treble. It just kind of feels like, you know, particularly with English football, the Premier League has built an image on being the most competitive league in the world. So if City win the title this season, that'll be 6 of the last 7 titles won by them. And that at some point does start to erode the brand image of the Premier League. Now you could argue, well, what does that matter to me, the brand image of the Premier League? But at some point, there would be a material impact with maybe players choosing to go to other leagues and other teams over the Premier League. So I think that could be an issue for the Premier League. I think it would be symbolic of how football has changed at the elite level over the last 25 years, where every season now, only a handful of clubs are really able to win the major honours. And I mean, in most leagues, it's like 2 or 3 clubs. In the Champions League now, it's what, like 5 clubs are capable of winning the Champions League every season? So I do think, I accept Joe's point that this doesn't happen very often. It's happened, like Barcelona did it, Inter Milan did it under Mourinho, Bayern Munich, did they do it? I think they did it. I think we're going to see this happen more and more in the future. Mm. And if it kind of reminds me of, you'll get this reference, Ryan, because you're an F1 fan like me. F1, Mercedes became too good they won like 8 seasons in a row the drivers' championship, and so F1 were like, right, we're just going to change the regulations for everything. They shook the snow globe basically just to get something different. Ironically, they've now got Red Bull just winning every single race. But it feels like European football is nearing that point. Of course, we're going to have a new format of the Champions League next season, the Swiss format. Now, just to clarify, I don't think the Swiss format has been designed to create more predictability at the elite level of European football. But that is my hope, is that maybe that's a byproduct of that new format, because it is starting to feel I'm feeling it this season in the Champions League, I have to admit. People have made this argument for a number of years. I haven't really seen it. This year, I'm feeling it. It feels a little bit predictable. I think you could pick out the semi-finalists from the Champions League from the group stage this season, and so I don't think it would be a great thing for European football if we have a team that is just so dominant in the form of Man City.
Graham, I agree with you largely. I don't think City winning a double treble would be great narratively for European soccer or for the sport in general. I also don't think that it is unique. I guess I don't think that this accomplishment completely emphasizes that argument in a way that it hasn't already been emphasized. Everybody knows how divided European soccer is. Everybody knows where the power lies, and we're seeing this right now with Manchester City and how long all of these gripes against them are taking to be brought to any sort of conclusion. We're seeing this with continued efforts at a Super League. The power is with the big clubs. The power is with the clubs that have all the money. It's not necessarily with the leagues anymore. It's not necessarily with the governing bodies anymore, despite their best efforts. It is with the Manchester Cities of each of these big soccer countries. And Man City are the biggest of them all right now. So that is already a troubling trend. If City win a double treble, it will re-emphasize some of the discussion points around this problem. But it doesn't either make... I'm not saying that this is where you're going, Graham. But I don't believe that this would make or break that point. And suddenly, if City win a double treble, all of a sudden, it is a real problem. No, it's been a problem. European soccer is broken in a lot of ways. The competitiveness is broken. And that is not going to change anytime soon, even with a new Champions League format.
Yeah, I suppose the problem, Joe, is Graham mentioned shaking the snow globe in F1 to change things up to make it more competitive. There's no real mechanism for that in the capitalist system of European soccer. We're not going to have a draft and a salary cap anytime soon. So this is just going to keep going, right?
Our only hope, I think that's correct, Ryan. Our only hope is that the Bundesliga cares enough about some semblance of parity, and they've kind of done some things differently before, that they take a swing at some point in the next decade, and maybe it works really well for them and generates more interest and other leagues follow suit. But no, that is the exceedingly optimistic way to look at it. No, I don't think we're seeing any of that stuff. And to bring it closer to home for me, and Ryan, I guess now for you, being back in the U.S., like, there's a reason why MLS is being real careful with some of this stuff. Number one is that a lot of the owners that get to make choices don't really want to spend money. But I do think it's a very legitimate side of things, not the lack of ambition. But I do think it's a legitimate way to look at the sport and say, hey, we don't want to go and be the Premier League. Yet we want to be as good as the Premier League in terms of quality. But from a competition structure standpoint, it's not as good as it could be. It's not as evenly balanced as it could be. And there's value in having dynasties and all that stuff. And I think if Man City was an exception to the rule, and we all believe that eventually someone would catch them sustainably over time and they'd fade a little bit, it would all be fine. You want dominant forces in sports to rise, but you also want them to fall so that a new one can rise. And that's the hard part right now. It doesn't feel like there's another dominant force coming in to take Manchester City's crown, not just in England, but probably in Europe either.
Indeed. All right, Graham, one last question from me. A big rivalry coming up this weekend, obviously the Manchester Derby. This is one of the few points in the season where you'd argue City could drop points because of the unpredictability of a derby. Will they? I think they won't.
No, they won't. Yeah, you could argue that. I think you'd be incorrect. I mean, Manchester United, going back a couple seasons, had actually quite a good record at the Etihad, the Solskjaer years. I don't know what it was, but they always seemed to have City's number at the Etihad. I think it was because they were actually pretty good in the counter-attack, and that matchup just allowed them to lean into that. So I guess maybe if Ten Hag took a, for once, this is maybe the only time he'd want to do this, but once take a leaf out of Solskjaer's book and just went full Ollie ball and played on the counter, that potentially could give City some issues. But I just do not trust that Man United midfield and that Manchester United defence. So I think this is going to be 3 points for Man City at the weekend. I've been to Manchester Derby before, it's a little bit more subdued than a lot of the other derbies I've been to. Man United Liverpool, I'd say, is a bigger rivalry in the Northwest. I've been to a Man United Liverpool game as well, and the atmosphere at that match was far superior to the City United one, which is interesting because obviously City United play in Manchester, play in the same city, so you'd maybe think the proximity would lift the atmosphere. But I think there's still a lot of generational stuff going on there where a lot of Man United fans don't see City as their real rivals. I think City clearly see United as their real rivals, though, and have taken a lot of joy in knocking them off their perch in the last few years.
Yeah. Which stadium did you watch the derby in, Graham?
Old Trafford. I saw.
Okay.
Might be part of it. If I'd watched it at the Etihad, maybe the atmosphere would be better because I think Man City take more joy in those matches against United.
Yeah, and Old Trafford not famed for its raucous atmosphere at the best of times. So
no, I've been to some matches. I've got a Man United supporting pal, and some of the games it's been like a library. I have to say though, I've been to a Man United Liverpool game at Old Trafford, and I thought the atmosphere was pretty impressive there. So it can get loud. I don't anticipate the Man United fans will be particularly loud this weekend because I think their team will lose.
All right, time will tell on that one. Joe, anything more on Man City before we wrap this big old thing up?
Just to say, I know I just wanted that whole rant about how European soccer is broken. I am excited to see how things end up. I'm excited to see what the Premier League title race looks like in a month where these conversations get a little more realistic around actual winners. I do think there are a few heavy hitters still in the Champions League. So it's going to be a fun end to the year while also still emphasizing that everything I said before still applies.
Absolutely. Listen to patreon.com/TotalSoccerShow if you want to continue the conversation about this topic on our Discord, and also check out our episode about big rivalries from around the world. But for now, Joe Lowry, thank you very much indeed.
City!
Graham, thank you very much indeed.
Thank you, Ryan, and thank you, Liam, for joining us at the end there again.
All right, Takir, thank you very much. Listener, thank you very much indeed for joining us on this episode. We'll be back on the feed very shortly, but for now, bye!